Hi, this is Hannah with the Ford County Chronicle, dated Wednesday, April 1st, 2026. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, A Look Back, President Ford's Visit to Ford County, Nothing Like It. Nearly 52 years ago, Tiny Melvin gave biggest of welcomes to our nation's president, by Dave Hinton, Chronicle correspondent. Lindsay Fancher said that he, like the rest of the village of Melvin, was ecstatic. Having a U.S. president visit Fancher's hometown was big news. Fancher was 13 when President Gerald Ford visited Melvin on October 24, 1974, to honor Melvin's most notable native, Les Arnes, who would soon retire after 40 years in Congress, the majority of that time in a leadership role. Fancher remembers the occasion like it was yesterday. Now, 64, Fancher was on hand when Ford's helicopter touched down near Melvin Sibley High School. Everybody from town went on what was dubbed Les Arnes Day, Fancher said. Hundreds waited near the school, while thousands more, one state police estimate put the number at 10,000, were on hand at the Ford County Fairgrounds, where Ford and Arnes would speak. There were 500 of us living in Melvin, and a lot of others from the outside area, Fancher said. Ford had been in office a little more than months, assuming the position after the resignation of Richard Nixon as a result of the Watergate scandal. Ford became the nation's 38th president. Fancher said he came close to getting to shake the president's hand, but couldn't because of the crush of the crowd. I was inches away from shaking his hand, Fancher said. I was there, but he shook another guy's hand, and then left to travel to the fairgrounds for the ceremonies. The president's transport helicopter was one of three that had landed north of Melvin Sibley High School that day. Fancher remembers the president's limousine being unloaded from one of them. Preparation for the visit started weeks before. Secret Service agents came to Melvin well in advance to view the area and scan for any potential troublesome spots. The village of Melvin rolled out the red carpet for Arnes and Ford. Fancher said the route from the high school to the fairgrounds was all repaved to make sure the new president had a smooth ride. The route included Crossley Street, where Fancher lived. The town was festooned with signs and banners celebrating the occasion. A banner from that day hangs in the Ford County Historical Society's museum in downtown Paxton today. Pat Tavner, currently the Historical Society's vice president, grew up in Paxton. As a youngster, he attended the Ford Arnes visit. Judge George Kay, who was running for the office, was our next-door neighbor, Tavner said. His son Jonathan and I used to run around together. We rode in the back of Kay's station wagon and threw out candy during the parade. That was held to honor Arnes prior to the president's arrival. Tavner said he does not remember much about the day, other than that there was a big crowd. Arnes was driven along the parade route in a 1934 Packard 12-cylinder owned by an Indianapolis collector. The year of the vehicle was evidently selected to match Arnes' first year in Congress. A Chicago Tribune reporter interviewed Fancher along the parade route. The motorcade then headed to the fairgrounds, where Arnes showed one of the skills that got him elected and re-elected for 40 years, pressing the flesh and smoozing with the public. When the announcement was made that Ford would be arriving soon, Arnes headed the 6 blocks to the landing site, where he shook more hands and greeted the president. Journalist John Skipper described the crowd amassed at the fairgrounds as a multicolored quilt of humanity from afar. Men, some in business suits, often in farmer's garb, and women, some in fancy dresses, others in shirts and slacks. And there were hundreds of children dotting the fabric that had been sewn for many hours, beginning early that Thursday morning. Not everyone was there to celebrate the occasion. Some were there to protest. Their issues included Ford's pardon of Nixon just a month before, the state of the economy, and what some Vietnam War veterans considered were insufficient benefits for medical and psychological care, foreign policy, and Ford's nomination of Nelson Rockefeller for vice president. While Fancher missed his chance to shake hands with the president, he did get to do so with a future president, Richard Nixon, who was campaigning in support of Arnes in 1966. Nixon was also in Melvin in 1960, campaigning in his presidential run, but was defeated by John Kennedy. But Fancher was too young to remember the occasion. Nixon went on to win election as president in 1968 and was re-elected 4 years later, before Watergate derailed his presidency. From the podium on a stage erected at the fairgrounds for the occasion, Arndt commented on the mass of humanity who turned out. "If this little town of Melbourne isn't sinking about an inch, I'm crazy." The Kankakee Daily Journal reported that some people had waited up to 4 hours to see Ford and Arndt, who was first elected to Congress during the height of the Great Depression. In his opening comments prior to introducing Ford, Arndt remembered the sub-zero day when he prepared to board a train for Washington, D.C. "I said to my brother, 'What am I going to do?'" Arndt said. "That was 40 years ago. I thought I would be interested in staying in Congress one term or two terms, then come back to Melbourne and try to make a living. Now, here I am, after 40 years, broke and happy." Arndt served as the Republican whip, the assistant leader, in the U.S. House from 1943 through 1971. That tenure was the longest term of service as a whip by either a Democrat or a Republican in congressional history. During his speech in Melbourne, Ford said he was always impressed that Arndt was a member of the Committee on Armed Services during World War II and the Korean conflict. "He had a substantial part in helping us catch up to get prepared to eventually win against the dictators Hitler and Mussolini," Ford said. "He helped us gear up to take care of problems that resulted from an invasion of an ally, South Korea. It was Les Arndt who made sure from the very beginning that the only way to make sure that we could win the peace and keep the peace was through strength." Upon Arndt's retirement from Congress, Ford said Arndt gave 110% in everything that he ever did. He did it for the state, his country, and his family. "We had a close, warm, deep personal relationship that I don't think has been matched by any other." As a House Armed Services Committee member, Arndt cast the deciding vote when the House approved the Selective Service Military Draft not long before Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, which prompted the U.S.'s entry into World War II. Being a congressman was not always a safe endeavor. He came within a whisker of being struck by a bullet fired by one of four fanatics in the House chambers in 1954. Arndt's desk and chair were splintered. Arndt was unharmed. Arndt was a strong advocate of the Chinook Air Force Base in Rantoul. The Defense Department closed the base in 1993. If Les was still alive, Chinook Air Force Base would still be going, Fancher opined. Arndt, who attended Melbourne schools and from 1912 to 1913, was a student at Oberlin College in Ohio, was a Navy veteran of World War I. He acquired and rented out several farms following the war and became president of Melbourne's Commercial State Bank, which his father had founded. Following his retirement from Congress, Arndt maintained homes in Melbourne, Washington, D.C., and Naples, Florida. He was survived by his wife, Betty, and a daughter and grandchildren. Now in his 60s, Fancher keenly remembers the day when his hometown was in the news. "A young kid, the president, comes to a hole-in-the-road town. There was nothing like it," Fancher said. The next article, also from page one, is titled "Fourth Felony Filed Against Ex-Teacher Alleging He Tried to Solicit Teen for Sex." Paxton. Ford County's prosecutor has added a charge of indecent solicitation of a child to the three other felonies already filed against former Paxton Buckley Loda teacher and Alumni Hall of Famer Paul M. Muser, who remained jailed this week, awaiting the rescheduling of a detention hearing and appointment of a new judge for the case. State Attorney Andrew Killian filed the additional count, a Class 2 felony, on Tuesday, March 24th, when the 72-year-old Muser of Buckley appeared with his attorney, Lance Cagle, in Judge Matt Fitton's courtroom for a detention hearing in Ford County Circuit Court, according to online court records. Muser was charged the previous week with two counts of attempted criminal sexual assault, a Class 2 felony, and one count of grooming, a Class 4 felony, and was arraigned on those three charges on Monday, March 23rd. Muser has been in custody at the Ford County Jail since Friday, March 20th, following his arrest on a warrant in Oklahoma in 4 days. In a petition filed Tuesday, March 24th, to deny Mueser's pretrial release, Killian noted that Mueser poses a real and present threat to the safety of the community. There was no immediate ruling on Killian's petition. However, as Cagle motioned for a change in judges to hear the case, according to court records, and Fitton agreed to work with the chief judge of the 11th Judicial Circuit to coordinate the reassignment of the case and the setting of a new detention hearing. According to the initial three charges filed against Mueser, a former driver's education and PE teacher at PBL High School, he allegedly invited a teenager to his home last Christmas Eve, intending to commit a sexual act with a teen. Also, between January 2025 and December 24, 2025, Mueser allegedly offered the teen snacks and money, discussed things of a sexual nature, including his desire to perform acts of sexual penetration with the child, and exchanged emails with the teen outside of school. The newly filed count alleges that Mueser, between January and December 2025, solicited the same child to perform a sexual act. Mueser resigned from his positions at PBL High School on March 11th, 3 days after he was placed on administrative leave amid an investigation by Ford County authorities into alleged inappropriate communications with the minor, PBL's interim superintendent John Kilgore said. Mueser, a 1972 Paxson High School graduate and former four-sport high school athlete, was introduced into the PBL Alumni Hall of Fame in September 2024, not long after returning to his native Paxton to teach at PBL High School following a career as an educator, athletic director, and accomplished Hall of Fame head boys basketball coach at various high schools in Oklahoma. If convicted, Mueser would face a sentence ranging from probation to up to 7 years in prison for each Class II felony, along with a term ranging from probation to up to 3 years in prison for the Class IV felony. The next article, from page one, is titled Solar Farm Proposed for Just Northeast of Gibson City. A map shows where a 2.25 megawatt solar farm is proposed to be built on farmland just northeast of Gibson City. An April 21st meeting on the project is scheduled, courtesy of the City of Gibson. Gibson City. The Gibson City Plan Commission will meet at 6 p.m. Tuesday, April 21st, at City Hall, 101 East 8th Street, to consider a petition for a special use permit allowing for the construction and operation of a 2.25 megawatt solar farm on farmland just northeast of the city. The petitioners are Larry and Cheryl Cruz of Champaign, who own the agriculturally zoned land at Ford County Road 600 East in Illinois 54 in Drummer Township, and are represented by Jason Gribson of Illinois Solar Ford Project 1, LLC. The firm's San Francisco address, as listed in the February 17th permit application, is also the headquarters of Forefront Power, where Grimson is employed as Director of Development. According to its website, Forefront Power is a developer of commercial and industrial-scale solar energy and battery storage projects. It is a subsidiary of Mitsui & Co. Ltd. and operates under Mitsui's North American investment arm, My Power Corp. A Forefront Power-generated map of the proposed Ford County project was attached to the permit application, showing its proposed location on a 23.42-acre triangle parcel of land to the southeast of Illinois 54. The project would involve solar panels, solar racking, inverters, and an access driveway according to the application. The city's plan commission is expected to issue a recommendation for consideration by the city council on whether to approve the permit. The commission is chaired by Chase McCall and also includes Chris Cornish, Donna Boundy, Terry Hutchcraft, David Crow, Mike Allen, Betsy Hammett, Mike Perkins, and Kevin Askew, according to the city's website. Because the city has zoning authority within 1.5 miles of its corporate limits, the project will not go before the Ford County Zoning Board of Appeals, said the county zoning administrator, Brandon Majors. That will be a notable change from the county's past practices. Last December, for example, the county's ZBA was prepared to hold a public hearing, only to end up canceling it for special use permits requested for two proposed 5-megawatt commercial solar farms just north of Gibson City. The project, also known as Goldenrod East LLC and Goldenrod West LLC, were to be built on former Railside Golf Course property under the project proposed by JAS Power LLC, a subsidiary of Greenvolt LLC. Earlier, the county's ZBA also considered a special use permit for Arlington, Virginia-based Earthrise Energy's 135-megawatt solar farm, currently being built 1.5 miles northwest of Gibson City in Drummers Township, the county's first solar farm. From page 1, partial motion to dismiss granted in lawsuit versus PBL. Paxton. A judge ruled Monday that the Paxton-Buckley-Loda School District cannot be held vicariously liable under the legal theory of respondent superior for the alleged sexual misconduct of suspended teacher and former coach Rob Pacey. During a hearing Monday morning in Ford County Circuit Court on a series of lawsuits filed by 5 current and former female students last summer, McLean County Judge Rebecca Foley granted the district's partial motion to dismiss. The district's attorney, Michael Bersani of Itasca, filed the motion on December 12th, seeking the dismissal of respondent superior liability claims made against PBL. In her ruling, Foley agreed with Bersani's argument that an employer cannot be subject to respondent superior liability for an employee's willful and wanton intentional or criminal acts, if those acts occur outside their scope of employment. Foley noted that an employee's alleged sexual misconduct does not fall within the scope of their employment, since it is only for their personal interests, not the employer's. After receiving the ruling of the court on the defendant's motion, the plaintiffs looked to move forward with their case, seeking accountability for putting minor students at risk and pursuing their multiple remaining claims against the defendants. The plaintiff's attorney, Bhavani Ravindran of Chicago, said in a statement, Foley granted the partial motion to dismiss with prejudice, meaning the applicable claims of respondent superior liability resulting from Pacey's alleged sexual acts cannot be refiled against PBL. It remains to be seen, though, whether the district can still be held vicariously liable for various non-sexual acts that may be within Pacey's scope of employment. Foley granted Ravindran's request for leave to potentially amend the lawsuits she filed last summer, which have since been consolidated into a single case, to include additional allegations that are non-sexual in nature and fall within the scope of employment. Foley allowed Ravindran 21 days to file an amended complaint. Foley said she would schedule a motion hearing sometime between April 21st and May 1st. Foley suggested several possible dates for the hearing and asked the attorneys to choose one. During the hearing, an initial deadline for the issuance of written discovery could be issued by Foley. In preparation for the discovery process, Foley asked attorneys about the status of subpoenas that they had issued to third-party entities involved in the case. Ravindran said 2 entities had responded to her subpoenas, the Illinois State Board of Education and the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services. The lawsuits allege that Pacey inappropriately touched and harassed female students during his 17 years of employment, and that administrators failed to properly investigate and address students' claims of misconduct, ignoring the district's own policies by never notifying the DCFS as required. 5 defendants are named: the school district, Pacey, PBL Junior High School Principal Josh Didier, and former superintendents Travis Dooley and Cliff McClure. In the lawsuits, the plaintiffs contend that PBL should be held liable, vicariously, for the alleged sexual misconduct of Pacey. However, both in court Monday and in court filings, Bersani disagreed, arguing the legal theory of respondent superior, which holds that employers can be liable for their employees' actions while acting within the scope of their employment, should not apply. Citing previous case law, Bersani noted that alleged acts of sexual assault harassment, or grooming by a school district employee, as alleged of Pacey, constitute conduct that is not for the benefit of the district's interests, but only the employee's, and therefore cannot be considered to be in the scope of their employment. While the alleged sexual misconduct happened on school grounds while Pacey was performing his role as teacher or coach, Bersani noted the alleged sexual acts were not tasks that Pacey was required to perform as a part of his employment and served no benefit to the district or its interests. Meanwhile, Ravindran argued that not all of Pacey's alleged acts were sexual in nature and should therefore still fall within the scope of his employment. Ravindran mentioned, for example, how some of the alleged acts inflicted emotional distress on students, but did not necessarily rise to the level of a criminal or sexual act. Among other examples of physical intrusion of a non-sexual nature, one student was allegedly struck in the head, she said. Pacey was suspended last spring as a STEM and technology teacher at Clara Peterson Elementary School in Paxton. Pacey, who is being represented by Chicago attorney Emily Schnitt, had not been criminally charged and has denied any wrongdoing. From page A3, Melvin trustees working to help attract gas station to their town. Also, village planning to launch new build program as incentive. Melvin, village trustees met in special session on Tuesday, March 24th, learning that trustee Alan Baker has been diligently working with a local company interested in opening a gas station in Melvin. There is still much work to be done, but the village board agrees that we are very excited about this prospective business and will do everything possible to encourage further development, village president Amber Hoffman said. New build program. In other business, Hoffman said that once she receives approval of the board, she plans to begin putting together a new build program to incentivize new construction in the village. After years of demolition, the village is left with many empty lots that should be serving a purpose, Hoffman said. Whether it's a home, a business, or a community service, we'd like to see new faces and new opportunities in our community. We will be offering incentives to build homes and businesses in Melvin. I will provide more details after the board approves a finished proposal. The board was scheduled to hold an emergency meeting at 7 p.m. Tuesday, March 31st at Village Hall, to discuss the renewal of the village's garbage refuse contract. From page A2, Gibson City Council. Holt takes part-time gig with Greater Gibson Area Economic Alliance. Pro basketball player, a graduate of GCMS, to help organization with data analysis on a part-time basis. By Mindy Bazzi. Gibson City. Former Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School basketball star Ryland Holt, who is currently playing the sport professionally in Europe, will work part-time this summer for nonprofit Greater Gibson Area Economic Alliance, helping the organization with economic data analysis. The GGAEA's executive director, Matthew Burns, announced Holt's hiring during the March 23rd meeting of the Gibson City Council. Holt will work about 10 hours a week, Burns said, and has already gotten started. It's an interesting schedule when you are playing ball professionally, where they are not running you 10 hours a day, Burns said. That is enough to squeeze in 10 hours part-time for us to make some charts and look at some data. He will be here this summer. Upon graduating from GCMS High School, Holt earned his Bachelor of Science degree in Interdisciplinary Studies with a concentration in Human Performance, Leadership, and Communication and Science from Minnesota State University, graduating cum laude. He went on to earn a business degree in business administration at West Texas A&M University in May 2024 and has been a licensed real estate agent for the past 2 years in addition to his ongoing basketball career. Burns also announced at the council meeting that he has begun meeting individually with council members to discuss the city's potential membership in the organization, as well as broader strategies for economic development moving forward. Alderman Scott Davis was appointed mayor pro tem for the meeting in Mayor Dan Dickey's absence. Other aldermen present were Ray Hankies, Susie Tongate, Randy Wyant, Laura Miller, and Terry Roche, plus junior alderman Landon Lage. From the obituaries, Charles E. Barham, Strawn, Charles Edward Barham, 70, of Strawn, died Saturday, March 21, 2026, at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. Ronald K. Benway, Sibley. Ronald K. Ron Benway, 67, of Sibley, died Sunday, March 22, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services were at 11 a.m. Saturday, March 28. Melvin. Helen R. Curtis, 87, of Melvin, died Monday, March 23, 2026, at Gibson Area Hospital in Gibson City. Joan I. Haynes, Urbana. Joan I. Haynes, 93, of Paxton, formerly of Urbana, died at 1:29 a.m. Wednesday, March 5, 2026, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton on Pells. Faye Fern Kirby, Paxton. Faye Fern Kirby, 90, of Paxton, died Wednesday, March 25, 2026, in Danville. Ruth Irene McClure, Gibson City. Ruth Irene Paris McClure, 89, died Wednesday, March 25, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Marilyn Stack, Paxton. Marilyn Stack, 90, of Paxton, formerly of Thawville and Loda, died Friday, March 20, 2026, surrounded by her loved ones. Obituary. Cynthia Ewert. Cynthia Cindy F. Ewert, born July 8, 1958, died March 27, 2026. Cynthia F. Cindy Ewert of Marion, Indiana, died at home in the early afternoon of Friday, the 27th of March. She was 67. Frances Redding. Frances L. Sunny Redding, 96, of Fisher, passed away on Tuesday, March 24, 2026, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of life for Francis and for his wife Helen will be held at a later date. A final quote from page 1. Fighting Illini in the Final Four, headed to Indy. We're going to turn Indy orange and blue, and we're going to kick everybody's butt there, says Illini coach Brad Underwood, whose men's basketball team is headed to Indianapolis for next weekend's Final Four. This has been Hannah with the Ford County Chronicle, dated Wednesday, April 1st, 2026. I hope you have a lovely rest of your day.